WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into, you know the show, Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870, 94.5 FM. It is lovely here in mid-Michigan today, about 80-something degrees. The sun is out. I mean, just beautiful, beautiful, very warm. Hopefully this stays, right? Knock on wood, right? we plan on making your, I guess you can say your Tuesday afternoon just a bit more hotter, as we have a hot show in store for all of you out there. On today's hour of sports talk here on Current Sports, we will talk about the Big Ten and Friday night games. Yeah, there was a meeting that took place out in Illinois at the Big Ten headquarters between members of the high school execs, I guess you can say, in the Midwest. And they met with, actually, athletic directors from the Big Ten Conference to discuss whether or not Friday night college football games in the Big Ten Conference make any sense. So we'll debate whether or not it makes any sense later on this hour. You don't want to miss that. Also, Mark D'Antonio, head coach of the Michigan State football team, he had an interesting pick when it comes to, I should say when he was asked whether or not, I guess you could say when he was asked who was the best player he's ever coached throughout his tenure at Michigan State University, right? He had an interesting answer to that question, and we will debate whether or not Coach D nailed it. So you don't want to miss that. Also, current sports engineer Isaac Constance, he will bring to us a feature centered on Lansing's very own minor league soccer team, that being Lansing United, which, of course, the season is now underway for LU. Very cool feature in which Isaac got a chance to talk with two Lansing United soccer players as well as head coach Nate Miller. You don't want to miss that. And we will also have a conversation after that piece around the popularity of football here in mid-Michigan. And on the back end of the show, we have a very fun topic to bring to you all. I actually saw these two articles on this morning's MLive.com homepage. Two articles that break down the things you never say to a Michigan State fan and the things you never say to a Michigan fan in the world of sports, of course, right? So we will break down those things, and we will, of course, debate whether or not those things are accurate. You don't want to miss that, and we encourage you all to call in. I'm curious. I want to know from all of our Spartan and Wolverine fans that tune into Current Sports on a daily basis, or if you just so happen to be tuning in right now for the very first time, I want to know, to all of the Spartan and Wolverine fans out there, what irks you the most when it comes to being a Spartan or Wolverine fan? What just gets under your skin and really tees you off? We want to know. I want to hear your thoughts on that. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, or even tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR_sports. Without further ado, you guys know how we start this show. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners, brought to you by, of course, myself and Current Sports summer intern Jacob Herbert. All right, and we, of course, start with one of my favorite tournaments of the high school sports season, that being the Greater Lansing Softball Classic, which got underway yesterday at Rainey Park in Lansing. Really, like any other tournament, there were storylines everywhere. Weberville actually beat last year's champ Lakewood by a score of 1-0. Yes, a very tight game thanks to a walk-off RBI double from Aaron Hunt that won the game. Eden Rapids took care of Langsburg 12-4 in its opening round matchup. That game saw standout freshman Morgan Vanderwall finished 2-for-2 with a 2-run homer and 3 RBIs on the night. Vanderwall and the Greyhounds fell behind 4-0 early, but were able to totally earn themselves a spot in Wednesday's semifinal against Weberville. Very cool stuff there, and very shocking that Lakewood, a team that, get this folks, only lost 4 games last year, approaching this year's softball classic with a record of 9-3, falling in the first round. Yeah, we'll be at round, I should say still the opening round of the softball classic later on this afternoon. Keep it locked to Facebook.com/currentsports for a post-game wrap-up of today's 2-game slate, which I'll announce later on in the hour. Jacob, take it away, man.
The Lansing Lugnuts are on the verge of a historic feat as the club look to reach and surpass 1,500 wins. They had their first shot last night at the milestone, but they fell short, losing 10-2 to the Fort Wayne Tin Caps last night at Cooley Law School Stadium. They'll try again tonight for 1,500 as they take on the same Tin Caps, with first pitch being set for 7:05.
Yeah, and Jacob, you know, funny story. You know, Isaac and myself, we're very big NBA fans, right? And a pretty big NBA game took place last night. It seemed to be very entertaining from what I saw in the highlights. The reason why Isaac and myself didn't get a chance to cover, well, I should say not cover, but watch that game between the game 7, by the way, between the Boston Celtics and the Washington Wizards, is because we were at that Lansing Lugnuts and Fort Wayne Tin Caps game last night. And it was a blowout from start to finish, Isaac. And we were sitting there maybe hoping for a competitive game as it went on. And it never really happened. And we missed the entire Game 7 between the Celtics and the Wizards. A bit salty, but still fun to enjoy some baseball on the Monday night, right?
Exactly. My heart's broken, but at the same time, there will be more good basketball to come. But maybe not, because then you've got 2 blowouts set for the semifinals matchups. But whatever.
Yeah,
you live on.
Yeah, we'll see. What did you say, Jacob?
That's got to be pretty disappointing, too, to have a shot at. I mean, I understand maybe if you lose 3-2, 4-3, but to get blown out like that, 10-2,
yeah,
that's got to make it sting a little more.
We thought we were going to see 1,500, and that was the big storyline, right? But all right, moving on here. According to reports, former Michigan Wolverine and now Dallas Cowboy corner, Jordan Lewis, he is accused of dragging his girlfriend across the floor and grabbing her by the neck in their Ann Arbor apartment back in March. Now, get this. According to reports released to the Dallas Morning News, Ann Arbor police responded 2 years earlier to a report of a similar physical altercation at the same apartment. That investigation, however, did not result in any charges. Lewis believes that all charges will be dropped and that he will be exonerated from everything, saying, quote, "I'm completely innocent. I believe that wholeheartedly." Jacob?
Speaking of Michigan, the biggest rivalry in college football will be moving from ABC and heading to Fox, at least for this upcoming season. Per a presentation given to network affiliates earlier this week, the annual Michigan-Ohio State game will not be broadcasted on ESPN or ABC for the first time since 1986. The 2016 matchup between the two schools was the most-watched non-bowl game of the season, drawing a whopping 16.8 million viewers, so that game will be...
That's something
moving
else.
To Fox. Yeah.
And ESPN takes another hit there. I mean, we brought to our listeners a story last week, well, actually 2 weeks ago, about ESPN letting go 60 to 70 on-air talent, 100 employees in total, and now they lose the rights to broadcast Michigan and Ohio State. That's shocking, Jacob. All right, moving on. Just days after returning home from an 8-7 loss to Nebraska out in Lincoln, the MSU baseball team will be on the road again as they travel to Mount Pleasant to take on Central Michigan University. Today at 4:05 p.m., Sparty comes into this matchup losing 2 of their last 3 games and will be looking to turn things around against a team they beat 11-2 back in March in East Lansing. Again, first pitch set for 4:05 p.m.
The MSU softball team's Big Ten season may have ended with a loss to Ohio State in the Big Ten tournament just a couple days ago, but the Spartans still have games left to play as they will be participating in the inaugural National Invitational Softball Championship. The Spartans, who received an automatic bid for simply being a member of the Big Ten, will take on Murray State today at 4 p.m. Should they win today, the Spartans will move on to play the winner of Illinois State and, this is a mouthful, Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis, tomorrow at 4 p.m., which I didn't know that school existed. I kind of learned something today when I was doing my research.
Yeah, they call it EUPU. back in that area, I should say.
Okay, I know it as IUPUI because that's where George Hill went to college, actually. Well,
George Hill did go there, exactly.
Both of those are a lot easier to say, and I'll have to remember that for next time.
Yep.
Anyway, should the Spartans lose today to Murray State, they will take on the loser of that Illinois State IUIPIU game.
All right.
Tomorrow at 1 p.m.
Yeah, tomorrow at 1. All right, the Detroit Tigers will return home tonight for a lengthy road trip that saw them win 4 of a possible 9 games on that 9-game road trip, of course. Back in the friendly confines of Comerica Park, they welcome the second-best team in the AL East, the Baltimore Orioles. Matt Boyd will be on the bump for the Tigers, sporting a 2-3 record and a 3.89 ERA. For the O's, it will be Wade Miley, who comes in with a 1-1 record and a 2.45 ERA. Tigers left fielder Justin Upton has had some success in his career against Miley, batting a healthy 375 with one home run and two RBIs in his 8 at-bats against the left-hander. And last but certainly not least, until the NBA Finals get underway, tonight will be one of the most entertaining nights for NBA fans. In a secret room hidden in the walls of Midtown Hotel in New York, the NBA Draft Lottery results will be announced. According to SI.com, the Brooklyn Nets and Boston Celtics have the best chance with the number one overall pick at 25%. Following them in order are the Phoenix Suns, the LA Lakers, the Philadelphia 76ers, and the Orlando Magic. The hometown Detroit Pistons sit at 12th on that list with a 0.7% chance to take the top pick. You can catch the lottery starting tonight at 8 p.m., where it will be aired on ESPN and streaming on the Watch ESPN app. We will have an NBA draft lottery preview for you near the end of the hour. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Call in to be a part of the show. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Again, join us via live stream at facebook.com/currentsports and tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR _sports. So much to get to. Let's start the show.
Foot close out is not appropriate. It's dangerous. It's unsportsmanlike. It's just not what anybody does to anybody else. And this particular individual has a history with that kind of action. You can go back and look in Dallas games where he got a flagrant 2 for elbowing Patty Mills. The play where he took Kawhi down and locked his arm in Dallas. Could have broken his arm. Ask David West, his current teammate, how things went when Zaza was playing for Dallas and he and David got into it. And then think about the history he's had and what that means to a team, what happened last night. A totally unnatural closeout that the league has outlawed years ago and pays great attention to it. And Kawhi's not there. And you want to know how we feel about it. You want to know if that lessens our chances or not. We're playing very possibly the best team in the league. You know, we don't know what's going to happen in the East. And 9.75 people out of 10 would figure the Warriors will beat the Spurs. Well, we've had a pretty damn good season. We've played fairly well in the playoffs. I think we're getting better. And we're up 23 points in the third quarter against Golden State. And Kawhi goes down like that. And you want to know if our chances are less? And you want to know how we feel? That's how we feel. He would have played, and they'd have ended up winning. I go get dinner, have a glass of wine, wake up the next day, go to practice, and move on. But this is crap. And because he's got this history, it can't just be, oh, it was inadvertent. He didn't have intent. Who gives a damn about what his intent was? You ever hear of manslaughter? You still go to jail, I think, when you're texting and you end up killing somebody. But you might not have intended to do that. All I care is what I saw. All I care about is what happened. And the history there exacerbates the whole situation and makes me very, very angry. I'm still open to follow-ups.
Yeah, but he's still open to follow-ups. Ah, the great basketball mind of Greg Popovich, head coach of the San Antonio Spurs. I don't think there's any argument that Greg Pop is the best basketball coach in the NBA. Arguably the best basketball coach on this planet we call Earth. Greg Pop sounding off on Kawhi Leonard, who is reported to be out for game two of the Western Conference Finals. Kawhi injuring that ankle of his not once but twice in game one of that Warriors 25-point comeback on Mother's Day, stunning the Spurs. It's like when Kawhi went out, the team kind of just totally collapsed. Totally collapsed. We all know that Kawhi Leonard is one of the most dynamic players in the National Basketball Association, and especially when you consider the fact that the Spurs are already without Tony Parker, and now you take out the team's best player, the Warriors will be skipping to the NBA Finals. In my estimation, from here on out, we may see a sweep in what could have been a really competitive series with Kawhi Leonard on the hardwood. But the question here, and the reason why Greg Popovich felt compelled to give the rant that he gave, was centered on the fact that Zaza Pachulia, on the second ankle injury that ideally took Kawhi Leonard out of that game, it looked as though Zaza closed out on a corner jump shot from Kawhi and just got under him. So much so that Kawhi, I believe, Isaac, didn't he come down on Zaza's foot?
He did.
Came down on Zaza's foot, injures that ankle again, and he just couldn't go after that. Actually, there was footage of Kawhi walking to the back and not looking healthy at all, really limping and head down, just out of it, right? So what's been debated since Sunday is whether or not Zaza Pachulia had ill intent. Did he intentionally try to injure Kawhi Leonard? And I must say, it's really hard for me to say yes. Isaac, I know you go on the other end of this whole thing, which we'll get to in just a moment. But the reason why I say that Zaza, it's hard for me to rule this a dirty play, is because how many times have we seen in the NBA guys close out on shooters and just happen to get under them? I don't think that Zaza did that. I think Zaza, it's the thing. When you have a player like Zaza who has had previous examples of him really going against the grain of ethics when it comes to playing the game of basketball, and as you see, Greg Popovich certainly did his research before that press conference because he brought up numerous examples of Zaza, again, going against the grain and being involved with plays that have been labeled by some basketball enthusiasts out there. And, you know, the NBA agrees with me on this because the NBA decided that they're not going to do anything to punish Zaza. They're not going to fine him, and they're not going to rule him ineligible for game two. The NBA said, look, we've investigated the matter, and we're not going to do anything here. So it's really hard to look at that play and say, oh, there it is. Zaza meant to take out Kawhi Leonard here. But again, when you've had a history of really going against the ethics of basketball out there on the court, when something like that does happen, and especially a name like Kawhi Leonard goes down, and now he is ruled out for game two of the Western Conference Finals, you better believe that Greg Pop and the San Antonio Spurs and the San Antonio fan base and those who are fans of the NBA playoffs that want to see a competitive series between the Warriors and Spurs, they are going to be a bit ticked off. So that's the big debate here when looking at it. And it's hard because, you know, I looked at the highlights of last night's game, you know, and I gave the reason why we couldn't tune into that game last night. The reason why we couldn't tune into last night's Eastern Conference semifinal game, right? But we both tuned in and watched that game on Sunday, Isaac, and we had some friendly banter at the Lansing Lugnuts game about it. And you and I see where you're coming from as well, and I see where people are coming from, like Greg Popovich, when they make the statement, oh, yeah, you know, that probably was a dirty play, and Zaza knew what he was doing. However, I've seen this play a million times. It just didn't involve maybe a big-time player during the Western Conference Finals going out and really now flipping the series on its heels. I see where people are going with this and labeling Zaza a dirty player, but I won't go that far. I just can't go that far when you look at the play.
Well, I would have labeled Zaza Pachulia a dirty player probably a year ago. This is something that, in my opinion, has been well established. The reason I think it's a dirty play, and notice I say I think. I don't say it is, because really, at the end of the day, this was not as black and white as some other plays. You go back in NBA history, and there's an instance of Ron Artest delivering a vicious elbow to the head of James Harden. Mm-hmm. That was intentional. There is no two ways about that. But at this play, this moment, no, there is reason for debate. Zaza, for me, though, he's just lost the benefit of the doubt. And you heard Pop reference and allude to several different examples in the past. Zaza was assessed a flagrant 2 for an elbow on Patty Mills. He hooked Kawhi's arm the other time.
Now, what I'm not
arguing is that Zaza had ill intentions of trying to take Kawhi out necessarily. What I'm saying instead is, when you're a dirty player, there's a certain way of playing. And that's, you get in close on the guy. You try to get under his skin. That's what Zaza Pachulia's role is. And
exactly. That's
what I think he tried to do on that play, is get a little bit close. I think he did try to undercut Kawhi on the shot. Like I said, I don't think he was trying to take him out of the series or game 2 or the rest of game 1. But I am saying that when you're dirty, you get a little bit closer, just like Bruce Bowen did for the San Antonio Spurs earlier in his career.
Well, I'll say this. I think Shaq made a great point last night. When watching the banter on this topic, I thought it was great dialogue between Shaq, Charles Barkley, and Kenny the Jet Smith. Kenny, I agree with Kenny probably the most out of the three opinions that they had. Kenny said, look, I don't think that it was a dirty play. It's hard to make that assumption in a play that happens that quick when a guy's just trying to close out. Contact happens. It's basketball. It's a physical game, especially during this time of the year, as much as we like to rag on how soft the NBA has become, right? And that's Zaza's role. He's one of the physical enforcers of the team. Shaq made an interesting point, because Shaq is a big man. He was one of the greatest centers to ever play, and Shaq talked about, he thought it was a dirty play, because Shaq talked about how, as a big man, when you have, you know, the size shoe that you have in the NBA, when you make a closeout like that, it's a 50-50 chance that when you come down, especially when a guard comes down from a jump shot, it's a 50-50 chance that that player can come down on your foot. And then Charles made the point as to say, look, I'm not going to go on national TV and label Zaza Pachulia as a dirty player, but I will say that was a dirty play. So you saw three different opinions that all have some validity to them. And I can see all of those points of view, but it's hard. And again, the NBA came out and said, you know what, we're not going to fine Zaza. He's not going to sit out game 2, because it's so hard when you look at the play in real time to say, uh-oh, that was really, really dirty. So looking at our Facebook feed right now, Isaac, we do have one comment. This comes from one of our dear listeners, Remy, one of my good friends here in the industry, who's on actually 96.5 here locally in Lansing. Love his show. We listen to him all the time, don't we?
We do.
He
yes,
knows his
absolutely.
Hip-hop and R&B, doesn't he? Remy, he's also a big sports enthusiast, and he says, quote, he did not. It was just unfortunate. And I have to agree with Remy on this. So I'm curious to get, you know, calls now from our listeners and also comments. Again, go to Facebook.com/currentsports and call up 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I want to bring up this story now. I want to transition into an interesting debate when it comes to the Big Ten Conference and Friday night games. We have briefly highlighted this multiple times, because when the announcement was made, there was a lot of people that
We're kind of happy about it, but on the flip side, when it comes to those who are big high school football fans, there are many of you that said, no, this is not right. Friday nights are reserved for high school gridiron action, and I totally get that as well. But the conference back in November announced that it will be playing 6 Big Ten Friday night games this upcoming season. Now, the new TV agreements with ABC, ESPN, and Fox say that this Friday night 6-game agreement will take place over the next 6 seasons. Now, great banter has been happening back and forth. You know, when you look at it, Northwestern AD, Jim Phillips, he was able to convince the conference actually to move its 2 scheduled Big Ten games on Friday night to Saturday. One of those was a home dance with none other than Michigan State University. And when you evaluate Michigan State's upcoming schedule for the 2017 season, that was the only Friday night game that the Spartans were scheduled to play next season. MSU has opened the year with a Friday night game over Labor Day weekend for the past 6 years. And the reason being, in my estimation, is because if you look at that first week of high school football, right, the week of Labor Day, what happens? High schools open up their respective regular season games on Thursday, not Friday. So if Coach D and his coaching staff wants to get out and recruit that week, knowing that they have a Friday night game, well, they have the luxury of knowing that the majority of high school football games are going to take place on Thursday instead of the night that they open the season. When you look at the last 6 seasons with MSU opening up a Friday night game, 5 of those have taken place at Spartan Stadium. So Northwestern AD Jim Phillips, he did not like this idea, so much so that, again, he was able to convince the Big Ten Conference to move those 2 scheduled Big Ten games on Friday night to Saturday. So I don't know yet, and I don't think the conference knows yet, what's going to fill that void of reaching that 6-game quota for the Big Ten Conference. However, this is all about moolah, folks. It is all about the Benjamins. When we talk about moves like this and we talk about TV contracts in any sport, let alone Big Ten college football, it's all about tweaking things to see which games can be put on certain days, and depending on those days and matchups for that matter, which matchups are going to bring in the most money at the end of the day. Now, it's interesting because, again, Jim Phillips didn't like the idea. So he decided, hey, Big Ten, I don't like this idea. Can you move those Friday games to Saturday? It does nothing for us. However, Northwestern's, I find this very interesting because Northwestern's average football attendance rose 4% in 2016 in comparison to the year prior to. However, Northwestern has not garnered high attendance during a normal Saturday or Friday night college football game, for that matter, because Northwestern still finished 13th in the Big Ten Conference when it comes to overall attendance. The Wildcats averaged 34,798 fans per home game in 2016. When you look at the stadium, that's filling about 74% capacity. Doesn't sound great, right? However, that was still a 4% rise. It just shows you how dire things are when it comes to college football fandom for Northwestern, right? That was still a 4% rise from the year prior too. Only Purdue at 34,451 fans per home game had a smaller attendance among Big Ten schools. But again, it was still a 4% improvement. The Wildcats actually benefited by having 2 Friday night games, which were the win over Duke and the loss to Nebraska. Those were the 4th and 2nd most attended home games for the Wildcats last year. So I found it a bit confusing for Jim Phillips to convince the Big Ten Conference to not have Friday night games when evaluating how things worked out for them last year. They actually brought in some nice moolah. Granted, you also had to take this in consideration. The fan bases of Duke as well as Nebraska travel quite nicely. So they also had the benefit of that. Administrators from high schools in the Midwest, again, they were a bit ticked off about this and actually had a 2-hour meeting yesterday
with the 14 Big Ten athletic directors who are having annual meetings at the Big Ten headquarters out in Illinois. So when it comes to Michigan State's perspective here, and again, the big question here is, how does this affect recruiting? Because let's say a Mark D'Antonio has a Friday night game on a regularly scheduled regular season week for college football, a regular week where high school does have Friday night high school football games. That does not allow Coach D or his coaching staff to get out there on the recruiting trail and try and woo some of the great young talent here in America. MSU playing again, Friday night game on Labor Day week won't affect recruiting because, again, that first week happens on a Thursday. Mark Hollis said that the Spartans would only agree to play home games either on that Friday of Labor Day or the day after Turkey Day. And you guys know the reason behind that, right? Because the week of Thanksgiving usually marks the final week of high school football action here in the state of Michigan because state championship games are taking place down at Ford Field. Certain teams, though, could use the national exposure, I must say, of having their team play on a Friday night. And that opinion was echoed by Illinois AD Josh Whitman. He was big on that. Josh said that, you know what, us being on the big stage would give us great exposure. And Mark Hollis actually equated that opinion and sympathized with that opinion because Mark remembers when a man by the name of Tom Izzo, who was the head coach of the Michigan State men's basketball team, when Coach Izzo was trying to get Michigan State basketball on the map. And they had a, quote, anytime, anywhere, any place mindset. Because that's how you have to be if you want your program to slowly climb that ladder of national relevance and being seen. Izzo said, look, this program isn't where I want it to be right now. So you know what? We are going to play anyone at any time, at any place. And we are going to not just play you guys. We're going to win a few of those. That's what I love about Tom Izzo. So I get it. And I get the opinion of Illinois AD Josh Whitman. As far as Jim Harbaugh is concerned, for all of the Wolverine fans out there, well, I have labeled Jim Harbaugh the king of recruiting because Jim, if you look at especially what happened last year with the whole satellite camp conversation and that whole fiasco, him spending the night at recruits, you know, houses and taking his shirt off and playing football with some of the great talent, great young football talent here in high schools across America. I mean, Jim Harbaugh pulls out all of the stops when it comes to recruiting here in the U.S. of A. So naturally, Jim Harbaugh said that he is against Friday night games and says that those are, quote, for high school games, end quote. Penn State was also a bit perturbed about Friday night games and said that they would only consider a Friday game, again, much like Mark Hollis said, after Thanksgiving, after things are said and done with high school football when it comes to the state championship scene, right? So I want to know where you guys fall on this because when you every school in the Big Ten Conference has a different fan base. Every school in the Big Ten Conference brings in a different amount of money depending on the program. So it varies. I can see where AD Josh Whitman at Illinois is coming from and saying, yo, this would greatly help us. This could bring in some money. This could put our school on the map. People will watch us on a Friday night as opposed to watching some of the big dogs like Alabama, LSU, and Clemson on a regular Saturday afternoon or Saturday night. People can watch us on that stage, and it would really do a lot when it comes to branding Illinois college football, where some of the big dogs of the Big Ten Conference, like a Michigan State, like an Ohio State, the majority of them having the opinion like, look, this really does nothing for us. We need to be out on the recruiting trail. It's a catch-22. It really is. But I sympathize with both points of view here. At the end of the day, I agree with the Big Ten in saying that, yeah, look, Friday night football games can put the conference on the map as well and could get people interested in the Big Ten brand. So I have no problem with it, to be honest with you all. But I also see where certain coaches are coming from. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. Go to Facebook.com/currentsports if you want to weigh in, and also tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at our official Current Sports Twitter page at WKAR_sports. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, Current Sports engineer Isaac Constance will tell us about the start of a new year for Lansing United. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. This is very interesting. I just saw this literally as we hit that first break, Isaac. I know we got Austin on line one, and I definitely want to get back to the Big Ten Friday night conversation as well. But first, I want to pass this news along to you guys. Moses Malone Jr. filed an amendment to a civil lawsuit yesterday seeking damages from James Harden for allegedly orchestrating a beating last summer in retaliation for a Facebook post that he offended the Houston Rockets star. Malone, the son of NBA legend Moses Malone, was beaten and robbed of jewelry by four armed men back in June 25th outside of V-Live Club, I guess it's a club, an after-hours strip club in Houston. Four men were arrested in connection with the assault, including Darian Blunt, a security guard at the now-closed club, and charged with aggravated robbery with a deadly weapon. So, Moses Malone Jr. saying that James Harden orchestrated this beatdown. That is interesting stuff. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. We ended segment A by touching on Big Ten Friday night games. As I mentioned, back in November, it was announced that new TV agreements with ABC, ESPN, and Fox say that there will be at least a six-game agreement on Friday nights that will take place for the Big Ten Conference and college football over the next six seasons. So let's go to line one right now. We've got Austin from KZoo. He's in Kalamazoo now, I believe. Austin, what's up, dude?
What's up, Al? How's it going, man?
Good to hear from you, man. I saw you were living it up on Facebook out in beautiful Mexico. Weren't you out in Mexico just a minute ago?
Yeah, I was there last weekend, man. One of our good friends from college, it was his 30th birthday. You might know him. I won't say his name on it.
Right, of course not. Right, confidential, right.
You might know him. So we had a good time, man. It was a really great time.
Oh, that is fantastic. I know you soaked up the sun, my man. It's good hearing from you, dude. What's on your sports noggin?
So before I get to the high school thing, I just want to say Alex might end up filing the lawsuit against me because I beat his friend Al up pretty bad on the golf course
this year. Stop it.
Instead of Austin set him up. So Al might, you and Alex might be filing a lawsuit too.
Look, we got to play, man. I'm ready. I'm going to try to get out there this weekend. Actually, I got my clubs ready. I haven't played in about 2 weeks. That's a lot for me. So we got to get out soon, dude. You don't want this L, though. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. We'll see, man.
Gotcha.
But in regards to about Friday nights, I think it is selfish of the NCAA to kind of steal away from the high schools. Friday nights has always been their night to shine. You know, they made a movie called Friday Night Lights. There's a TV show called Friday Night Lights, and it's all centered around high school football. And so I guess to kind of offset that, I think something cool that they could do is pick maybe like four local high school teams, say maybe the game of the week, and that Friday, say Michigan State has a game, like East Lansing High School and Everett could play the first game, and like Lansing Sexton and Okemos could play the second game, and those will be the opening games before Michigan State's big Friday night opening game. Some kind of way to get the entire community around Friday night college football, and without taking away from recruiting local recruiting and being able to give these kids some good exposure and being able to play under those lights on the Division I college football field.
That is a very interesting idea, and I think that's a really cool idea to be. I never even thought about that. I mean, as soon as I guess the school, respective schools get out around 3 o'clock, they head over to Spartan Stadium and play, and maybe play what, like two games before MSU kicks off, you know, the Friday night opener, right? But this is the thing, though. You know, when you have this conversation, you got to think about some of the big high school football powerhouses in the nation, right? And Michigan State would feel like they are missing out on the recruiting trail of possibly recruiting maybe somewhere down south or somewhere in Ohio, right, when having this Friday night game, right? I always try to look at the big picture here, Austin, and the thing is, I look at it from this standpoint as well. Let's say they stick with this. Again, it looks like it's going to happen, right? This six-game contract every single year for the next 6 years, right?
Yep.
And let's say Michigan State, let's say some of the powerhouses of the Big Ten Conference, those are the schools that primarily are featured on that Friday night scale, right? Maybe it allows some of the bottom tier schools like a Rutgers, you know, like an Illinois to really get back in the recruiting game. And maybe, you know, maybe it's like an equalizer here. Maybe that this allows them to get an extra week to get out on the recruiting trail and legitimately try to compete with some of the big tier schools in the conference. I kind of look at it that way as well, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree 100%. But I mean, I think this is the NCAA being the NCAA and being the quote unquote nonprofit organization that they are, man.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, it sucks for the kids and it's unfortunate for recruiting, but you know, business is business, right?
Exactly. And the NCAA tries to throw his weight left and right, and we all know this whole New Year's Eve, you know, bowl thing is not going to work out. They're actually going to modify that in the forthcoming future. But the NCAA believes that they can put any college football game on at any day during the week, and they can still bring in moolah, and the ratings are going to be what they are, right? And it is arrogance at the end of the day, for sure.
Right, exactly. So, well, thanks, man. Thanks for taking my call. It was good talking to you guys.
I see you on the links, my man.
All right, yes, indeed. Hey, Alex, start getting those lawsuit papers ready right now.
Stop
I'm going to beat them up pretty bad.
Stop it. It's not going down, all right? Austin, I'll chat with you soon, man. Good hearing your voice, dude.
Yeah, you too, man. Talk to you later.
517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Also, Remy chimes in and says that Friday night college football will be the Monday night football of college football. And you know, they're already having, I believe, Thursday night games when
they
it comes
do.
To college football now, Isaac. I mean, you can on any given week now, you can tune in to ESPN and they have like a Thursday night game now, which is way too early. I know I'm not watching, unless it's a really, really good matchup. I'm not watching Thursday night college football, right? And he also comments and puts a bunch of dollar signs, and that's ideally the foundation of this conversation.
Well, and when it's opening week, I think you have some room for variation. I like having the Wednesday, then the Thursday, then the Friday, all that leads up to this surmounting expectation for the college football season. I think that's fun. But once it's in the heart of the season, teams want consistency. Players want consistency. Fans, guess what they want? Consistency. Everybody wants a routine, a schedule that they can go along with. So I think for Friday games, yeah, give the small dogs some chance to get themselves a little bit of exposure like Illinois or Rutgers or something like that. But none of the big teams should be coerced into doing this just because the Big Ten or the NCAA wants to expand its market.
517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our final break. When we come back, Isaac Constance will bring to us a feature centered on Lansing's very own minor league soccer team, Lansing United. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports.
Yeah.
No more basketball, no more football. It's summertime. Oh, yes. It's beautiful outside, too, isn't it? 80-something degrees. Oh. And that means baseball is in full swing, of course, for the local sports scene. But another blossoming sport follows stride for stride. Soccer is officially underway, led by local club Lansing United here in Michigan. Last week, our very own Isaac Constance took a trip to training and discussed the composition of this year's edition.
The wait is over, soccer fans. Lansing United, the local NPSL club entering its fourth season, returns home with a record of 1-0 after beating the newly founded Milwaukee Torrent. Practices are well underway, and first-year defender Nick Strack said the team is coming together quite nicely.
It's a very strong team. For the teams I played like in the past, it hasn't been as structured as this, and it's a really structured and we got a lot of talented guys. You know, we got 36 plus guys out there, and it's really guys are fighting for spots.
But while the team has been well organized to this point, it's not to say that it's been an easy road. For some players, the road to Lansing itself has been long.
I've been here in the U.S. for like almost 2 years.
Midfielder Rafa Mentzingen hails from Brazil, but he says that he likes Lansing so far. Even if the breezy 60-degree weather on this day of practice is a little bit cold for his liking.
I would say the biggest difference is the weather, because I really like the community, I like the fans and everything, so it's been great.
He, like many others on the team, is still getting used to a new coach, but also getting used to a new city.
It's a really challenging to get players together over the summer, like especially, as I said, coming from different backgrounds, so, but Nate's been doing a great job about that.
Head coach Nate Miller says integrating new players is what's required.
Yes, it is difficult. That's the job.
Following the 2-0 victory against Milwaukee, Lansing returns for a 3-game home stretch. You can help welcome them on Friday, May 19th at the East Lansing Soccer Complex. For WKAR, I'm Isaac Constance.
Yeah, Isaac, and thanks for that feature. Again, you going out to training and sitting in on a practice with Nate Miller and his respective troops for Lansing United. And right now, I believe, you know, they're just coming off a game against the Milwaukee Torrent, as you highlighted, right? And the next three games will be at home. So you can check out Lansing United taking on FC Indiana this weekend. And then they, of course, will play the Indiana Fire Juniors and AFC Ann Arbor. A lot of soccer out in Ann Arbor. For you, when chatting with this team, Isaac, you know, we had Nate Miller on the show last week, and I find it so intriguing when you evaluate, and a lot of these players come from overseas, right? Soccer is very big internationally. It's actually the most popular sport when you evaluate the international sporting scene. And a lot of them travel from overseas to be a part of minor league soccer right here in the area. What is that culture shock like for a lot of them? Is it a shock at all?
Oh, it's entirely putting your face into a bucket of cold water. That's what it is. I mean, it could not be any more different. Every single year, Lansing United welcomes a new crop of players. And it's really difficult as a coaching staff and as a team, somebody like a James DeCosmo, who's been with the team for all four seasons, to try to get all of this to fit, to gel into one continuous fluid squad. But for a lot of the players themselves, I actually overheard a conversation where they were talking about ordering pizza. I'm not kidding. How different it is in America compared to where they're from. Because
Never ordered a pizza.
Not in America. Wow. And that wasn't Rafa Mentzingen, and that was a couple other players, I believe. One actually from South Africa. But at the same time, these guys, it's an entire culture shock. And these are people who obviously are pursuing their dreams of playing soccer. But it's also, like many other sports, just such a haven for these guys. It's something that they can do day in, day out, help themselves get accustomed, get integrated into the new community. And that's what soccer is really all about. It's such a global game. It's funny. It doesn't matter where you're from. But if you are from someplace else, if you're from a foreign culture, you do tend to stick together with this group of guys who you affiliate yourselves with, all because of kicking a ball around.
So what happens, because this team was founded back in 2013. What happens to a lot of these players after they finish up a year with Lansing United? What's the success rate, I should say, when it comes to minor league soccer and trying to make it for a team, a professional team internationally, or even maybe in the MLS here in America? What's that like?
Well, not all minor league soccer is amateur soccer either. So a lot of them try to just slowly ascend up the system into another rank, and just many times, just like a minor league baseball farm system, they try to go from let's just call it single A, which would be like the NPSL, to double A to triple A and so on and so forth. At the same time, though, a lot of these guys are chasing a lot more than soccer. There are college scholarships on the line here, too. There are college opportunities playing for a club. And in many ways, as is the case with all sports, that's your ticket to success. Even if you don't make it pro, a lot of times you can get just such a valuable experience playing with a club, getting that exposure, and then coming back, getting an education or getting a job elsewhere. So it's not necessarily a unilateral goal for all of these guys. There are all sorts of different things that you can get from it.
Thank you so much, Isaac. Again, Lansing United will be in action. You can catch them at the East Lansing Soccer Complex this Friday at 7 p.m. against FC Indiana. $8 for adults, $5 for youth. Looks like it's going to be a very beautiful weekend as well. So if you want to get out the house and enjoy something around Mid-Michigan, Lansing United is always a hot ticket. All right, we have less than 9 minutes left here in the show, and I want to bring this up because I found this to be very cool. Certainly two articles that are made for Sports Talk Radio. I went on MLive.com, as I customarily do every single morning. I read like nine local publications and national publications, trying to make sure I cross my T's and dot my I's when it comes to sports knowledge. And I saw an interesting article written by Scott DeCamp. And on MLive.com, you can check out actually two articles from Scott that brings to you things you never say to a Michigan State fan and things you never say to a University of Michigan fan. And just to go through a few of these here, when it comes to Michigan State fans out there, Michigan State fans hate when you bring up the whole little brother conversation. That, of course, stems back to Michael Hart making those comments.
I was just laughing. I thought it was funny. Another got excited. It's good. You know, sometimes you get your little brother excited when you're playing basketball and stuff. You let him get the lead. And then you just come back and take it back. Yep.
Yeah, you never bring that up to a Spartan fan. That could lead to an ugly, ugly interaction, I must say. Again, those comments took place back in October of 2014. So, of course, that makes the list. The same old Spartan saying, that also made Scott's list. MSU is not our rival, of course, when it comes to U of M fans kind of trying to downplay the rivalry between the Spartans and Wolverines. They also don't like it, according to Scott, when you bring up the whole John L. Smith or Bobby Williams eras of the Michigan State college football fandom. Let's go to an interesting interaction that dates back to October. I don't know what month it is, but when Michigan State played Ohio State on the road back in 2005, and John L. Smith had a bit of a meltdown.
Jack, his coach, obviously a miscalculation there, and you're upset. Tell me about it.
We should have been in a ball game with fast field goal. The coach had sent him in. We shouldn't have sent him in. That's a dang coaching mistake. That the kids are playing their tail off, and the coaches are screwing it up.
Yeah, how can you forget that, right? That was back. Do you remember that at all, Isaac? That was back in 2005.
I have no memory of that.
Yeah, you were a young pup, just like myself. I mean, that was 2005, but that's during the John L. Smith era, and it wasn't a great era. A lot of Spartan fans try to put that in the past and try to block that out of their memory, right? So Spartan fans, yeah, they don't like when you bring up the John L. Smith or Bobby Williams era, of course, right? And, you know, looking at the article even further, of course, you know, I like how Scott put this out there. You don't mention Jim Harbaugh or the Harbaugh name. I like that. The blue wall doesn't exist also made the list. The blue wall, obviously a political term. It's a real thing, Scott says, in the state of Michigan sports coverage as well. And according to Spartan fans anyway, the blue wall MSU fans speak of is the perceived media bias favoring, I should say, the maize and blue, that being the University of Michigan Athletics. And also, of course, the whole pride comes before the fall rant. That actually made the things that you don't bring up to a Michigan sports fan. And how can you forget Mark D'Antonio's eloquent rant about that, right?
Are you aware the Michigan players met at midfield after the game and had a moment of silence in response to your comment after the Appalachian State game?
No, I'm not aware of that.
Any reaction to that? You find that amusing?
I find a lot of the things that they do amusing.
They need to check themselves sometimes. But just remember, pride comes before the fall.
Anything specific?
Just hear, pride comes before the fall.
Ah, yes, you don't mention pride coming before the fall when it comes to Michigan sports fans out there. Going back to the Michigan State list, though, for Scott, I'll try to fly through these with just 4 minutes left. Quote, Izzo is a crybaby, or Izzo is a tyrant. You don't say that. Of course, the Spartan fans. Yeah, that sounds pretty obvious, right? Izzo to the NBA. Don't bring that up to a Michigan State sports fan. I agree with that one. Don't bring up the whole Kenny Anderson and clock situation back in March of 1990 as Michigan State, the number one seed in the southeast region of the NCAA men's basketball tournament, the Spartans trying to put away fourth seed Georgia Tech and that whole fiasco that took place. I'll elaborate more on that later on, probably on tomorrow's show. And, of course, the whole Michigan State and Kansas clock gate situation back in the day as well on the hardwood. And looking at some more comments here, Isaac, you know, and I should elaborate because we're short on time here. I want to elaborate on the Michigan list because the Michigan list is pretty funny as well. But I had to ask you, you being a Michigan State student, we both, you know, I went to Michigan State. I graduated from Michigan State University, and we are certainly immersed in the culture here, the green and white culture here as being students, right? And you naturally have to root for your team and your school, right? What irks you the most? You know, embracing bias here, something we don't normally do here on Current Sports, but embracing bias here, what irks you the most as a Michigan State fan?
Well, it's not sports. Usually I feel like going to the games, I've become pretty numb to all of that. But it is academics. When U of M fans bring up academics, there is that natural clap back on my end. And that's something that's pretty visceral. And it's a gut reaction. I can't really hold it back.
I hear that as well. That's something that I didn't really know much about when I came to Michigan State University.
Same.
I didn't even know that whole stigma even existed. But when I found out that it did, oh boy, that certainly did get under my skin. But for me, when I was on campus as a student, you know, how Michigan fans, you know, some, I'm not trying to label all of them this way, but how some Michigan fans out there try to downplay the in-state rivalry that does exist between Michigan State and Michigan. And they try to say, oh, our real rival is Ohio State. That irks me to my core. They used to irk me to my core, dude.
That's not true anymore. Let's keep it real. It's not true anymore.
Real quick, who do you think gets the number one pick in tonight's NBA draft lottery?
Give it to New Orleans. Let's go. Let's go, baby. 1% chance. Let's go, baby.
You got to be kidding me. For local Detroit Pistons fans out there like myself, the Pistons sit at a 12th possibility with a 0.7% chance to possibly win the top pick. The favorites? Yeah, look at this. The Boston Celtics and the Brooklyn Nets. The Celtics, who are in the Eastern Conference Finals right now, have a pretty good shot at possibly getting that number one pick, Isaac.
If the Celtics do, game over.
I'm telling you, man, that'd be something else if they do. All right, folks, we're out of time. Take care and be easy, people.